thought, I've packed them all into the Land Rovers, chock a block, and went away down to the guard room, the temporary guard room. I've just pulled up, and the bloody officer come out, he gave us such a bollock, and he said, it's not a bus service we're running, and all this bloody patty, you know. And I said, look, there's one of these as a spy, and we've taken the gun off him, like, you know. And he said, what do you mean a spy? And I said, why are you saying that? And they're all blabbering away, so they took them all into the guard room. Anyway, it transpired that one of them was he was Greek, and he was working for the Ministry of working for the Army. And I think the other bloke was an Egyptian, and they were working for the Army. But there'd been an earthquake in Greece. Now, this Greek who was working over there, he wasn't allowed to send any money to Greece. And they'd found out that he'd been sending money to his family because they'd been in the earthquake sort of thing. And they said he was, you know, it was all political sort of, you know. Anyway, we washed our hands of it and left it in the hands of the officer, like, you know. But I got a right old bollocking for using the thing as a bus service.
Aye.
Well, the bloody company would be doing, you know. We were doing that. We went down and we were down there for a week, and you were doing two on and four off for a week. And you had a Range Rover going south and a Range Rover going north.
Where were you billeted?
It was a temporary guard room at this Lido, like in the centre, you know. Say it was at a 10-mile stretch. We were roughly in the middle and 5 mile either way. We used to have some fun, like, you know, because there's one night, right, 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, just trotting away down the road, you know, and the driver says, there's some lights coming up behind us, you know. I said, all right. And thought not about it. And it was the buggers from the north. Out there, they grow tomatoes in the fields. And they'd been in the fields picking the tomatoes. And they came down, they belted with tomatoes as they went past. So we stopped at a field, got some tomatoes, and you had tomato fights going up and down the road. Until the next morning, you saw the Land Rover break up in tomatoes. And everybody wouldn't know what was happening. But that was the type of thing that we did. I mean, sometimes going that fast at the edge, the back was the butt, get your foot down, you know, get after them. But that was just part of it.
And you were there for a stint of...
For a week.
And how many times did you do that? Can you remember?
Well, we would have to do it for a week. And then maybe the air company would do it. And then after our companies had done it, maybe the guards would take over. I only did it the once. Mind, at the end of the week, it was, you were knackered, like. There was ordinary beds, you know, double beds. But, I mean, there was always somebody asleep. You got done the one with somebody, you just got out. And towards the end of the week, when you closed your eyes, you just think you're full of sand, you know, a lack of sleep. And then when they were waking you up to get up, your eyes were just the same. Trying to wake up, you dabble yourself in cold water to pull yourself together and go out and climb into the Land Rover and away. And this went on for day and night. You did it day and night. And during the day when you were doing it, as I say, I had to walk around the back of the houses with a rifleman. And used to be you wandering around and around. And you would see the higher the rank of the person that lived in the house, the better his wife treated you than the lower the rank. Like, if it was a sergeant's wife, she wouldn't look at you. She'd put her nose up and, you know. But if it was an officer's wife or, you know, somebody high up, they would ask you if you wanted a nice, you know, a drink of orange. You know, I mean, it was, you know, midday and you're wandering around the back, you know, and you're looking to see if, you know, if they're all right. And, I mean, there were some lovely gully birds lying sunbathing in the back, you know, because, I mean, there might only be 5 houses in 20, which were we were looking at. But you know, the Egyptians lived in the other ones, and he obviously had to walk past them to get around the back and that, you know, and eyeing the Delhi birds up and that.
Did you have much contact then with the local Egyptians?
Not with the Egyptians, no. They would stick a knife in you soon and look at you. In fact, Bill Stapleford, he was, I don't know what he was doing, but he got was it a pair of scissors or a knife? He got a knife in down here. Just where his belt, I was stabbed. And
so there was a lot of animosity. Wasn't
Well, I mean, it was understandable because, I mean, it was their country. And there was one night we were sent out, and they said, right, you have to guard this. There's another canal, you know. There's the Suez Canal, which is the shipping canal. There's an irrigation canal called the Sweetwater Canal, which runs parallel with it. I mean, if you fell in that, you got about 20 jobs. It was full of dead donkeys, and they used to do all the business in it and washing it. And you know, they called it Sweetwater, but it was outward sweet. And there was bridges over it, obviously. And they said, right, we're going to down, we're going to guard these bridges, and there's nobody got to come over that bridge, you know, a curfew. And we had to sort of lie in ambush round the bridge. And there was these two wogs, or Egyptians, came along the other side, came across the bridge, and so we nabbed them. And they were trying to tell us all sorts, but we couldn't understand them. So we just nabbed them and took them up to the guard room and handed them over to, you know, pass the book. And it turned out that poor sods were just going to work. They were railway workers and they had an early shift and they were going to work. And, you know, they would be late for work, they'd maybe get up early, they might have got the sack, I don't know. And we'd nabbed them.
So you were aware of animosity?
You know, and you didn't wander around the town. We were allowed to go into the garrison and wander around. But you went around. Not at night time, you didn't. During the day, it was pretty busy, you know. There was army wagons going down, and there was military police and lads wandering around if they weren't on duty. And you know, when it got dark, you more or less stayed where you were.
What did you do for recreation?
Well, there was a cinema somewhere near, but in the naffy, as long as the money lasted. And then that was it, just lie in the bed and catch a cigarette again. Read the Dandy and the Vain O. somebody get a letter from home asking what was happening if you didn't get a one. Clean your weapon, there's always sand in them. The sand was all over the place. But we're always on guard. You didn't have much time yourself. The only good thing about it was they used to pack in somewhere around about 12 o'clock. You know, you're up early, really early. And then we used to pack in about 12 and then start up again about 6 because the midday sun, you know, mad dog, the Englishman, you know. And the later wagon's on, to take you down this lido to go swimming, if you wanted. And it was the first time we got there, really the first full day after we got sorted out. They said, right, there's a swimming party, wagon laid on. So, all right, so everybody piles into the wagon, you know, going away along the canal road, and the bitter lakes are there, you know, going towards. And there was an officer in charge of us, and he was an officer who would joined us in Egypt. He hadn't been to Cray with us. And all of a sudden, the wagon screeched to a halt. And he gets out and he says, how many of you lot have got swimming trunks? Well, nobody had any swimming trunks. Because when we were in Cray, we used to just swim in the noddy in the in gym and get a bath in the gym, you know. And they said, but there's women there. We don't mind. Oh, no, he says, you can't. No, no way. And we said, well, it's a swimming detail, you know, pulling the old soldier. So he says, right, well. So we got out the wagons, and we got stripped off behind the wagons. And there's right on, we all ran across the road into the bitter lakes, you know. But we come up because it was like, it wasn't coral, but we're cutting our feet to hell. And we knew as soon as we got in, then we came out.
But any other things to do? Did you have much contact with the locals in the town?
No, not a lot. You could go down into the town and buy presents. Oh, there was local bars and that. There was a few, like, stores, you know, where leatherware used to. The favourite for a present was the lady's handbag with a brown handbag with a camel on the front, and, you know, typical. And there was cottons in that. Apart from that, there was very little contact.
But you were there over Christmas as well.
Yeah, aye. Nothing exceptional about the Christmas thing. It was, I can't remember where I was for Christmas. I remember the Christmas in Hong Kong being at midnight mass, but I can't remember about Christmas in Egypt. I know we had to go to church. It was in the garrison. It was a Catholic church. It was in the garrison. It was away from the camp. You had to get a lift really to it. But I can't remember. We'll get a Christmas dinner. The officers would wait on us, you know, tradition for Christmas dinner. And we wouldn't have many other than the ones who were on duty. But it was, it was nothing to shout about.
And of course, you were sort of filming in your time till the Edeem Mob.
Well, I had to go to June, not in the Edeem Mob. Certain part of the year, there's a wind called the Khamsin or something called, comes blowing in off the desert. And the first time it come over, we didn't have the. It was hot enough to leave the walls rolled up. And we were all just lying in bed, and the wind got up. And there was a tent before, there was like a tent there, and then there was our tent then. And we saw the lads in the tent next to us. They were jumping around. Because we all used to sleep in the noddy. And we're jumping around. We got wrong off the officer for that. We're jumping around. And because the tent started blowing down. It blown the tent down. And we were lying laughing our heads off, you know. And of course, ours blew down. And half the tents blew down. And half our gear was strewn over the barbed wire, you know. They just picked it up and that. So the next morning, we were all out. Putting the tents up, putting the pegs in, right place and everything. And for about a month, every fifth day, the bloody wind came and blew the tents down. This camp scene used to come in, regular top of it, every fifth day, and blow the bloody tents down. We were sick of sight. That was when we got our first suntans on. I remember that because we had our shirts off and we were heaving on the guide ropes to pull the tents up. And everybody was a cherry red. Our backs were all cherry red. We didn't get blistered or burned, but it was with working. We were all had like red, cherry red bodies, and we're sick of putting the bloody tents up. But the other ones who had the smaller tents, they were all right. It was just our big marquees were just acting like sails, and down they were going. And
what was the procedure then as you came towards the end of your time?
Well, you knew when your demob was due, and you just waited for it to come up on detail that you were going home for demob.
So were people going home on demob?
All the time, yeah. Aye. Was National Service coming and going.
Were you getting drafts from?
We were getting drafts from the UK, aye.
So it was a constant turnover?
Constant turnover, yeah.
Still National Servicemen coming in.
Aye. We, as I was saying, the guards, we used to guard these bloody filtration plants. And there was a good big sheet of instructions, you know, for each camp, each filtration thing. What you had to do if you were attacked. you had to find your flares in a certain pattern so they knew which thing it was, and you had the passwords and all sorts, you know. And you read them, obviously, when you took over, you know, but they didn't sink in, really. And, of course, there was an officer, didn't have to be DLI, there was a duty officer for the garrison. And he would just pop in anywhere, and he happened to pop on this bloody thing that we were on. So he rolls up to the gate, and of course the lad stopped, talked, who was there, all this blarney stuff, and he said who he was. So they let him in, and then he's walking around checking the guard, you know, and the lads are stopping him, all the rest, and then he come up and he says, what would you do if you were attacked? What flares would you find? Oh, bloody hell. I said, red over blue or something. He says, no, that's bloody wrong. I've got a bollocking for that because I'd have sent them all to the wrong camp. And but, I mean, when you're only there for a night or something, you can't be expected to take them all in. And that was got wrong for that. And then he had to have a guard. You know what I mean? He was the orderly officer. So he had to have a driver, and he had to have an escort, because he was driving around the bloody garrison at night. So that was another job that we had to do. If it was our officer who was duty guard officer, he had to have his driver and he had to have a rifleman as his escort to go around visiting these camps. And I see some of the lads were put on a train, and they just said, right, give them some food, and they just stayed on the train. Every time the train stopped, they got out and got on the top of the Bren gun. The idea being that they stop any wogs pinching any stuff off the train, and it would be a military train, you know, with food, with whatever you wanted, and just to stop the wogs from getting in and pinching them. There was one night that they got into the officers' camp, and they pinched the uniforms and sheets and all sorts. And we never knew they'd been in. They could have slit all the throats as far as we knew. But there was Wily Oriental Gentleman. Wog is a well and truly named Wily Oriental Gentleman. But it was all one guard after another guard, you know. And then we had every year it happens, the brigadier comes down, an admin, where all your gear's got to be tip-top. You've got to have your bed laid out like this, see, or everything squared off and polished and pulled up. And we were lucky in D Company because, I don't know whether because we were the smallest company, we had the least number of men, but he just said, I'll inspect your gear. What he does was, the whole battalion was on parade, and we did a marching and all the rest. And then he would say to the CO, right, I'll see A Company doing PT. I'll see D Company, he said, I'll inspect the gear. Well, everybody in the battalion had all the gear pulled up, so we didn't have anything to do. He said, I'll do B Company, I want them in full battle order, I want them in, you know, he picked each company he wanted, and we gear, so it was all done, we didn't have to do anything, you know, and he came into the tent, and he was checking the gear. The only fault he found was the mess tins, they were all scratched and blackened, and he was doing his nut about them, and the officer had enough about us away, they've been living out of them for a year. They've been cooking out of them and eating out of them. You can't expect them to be any other. And so he said, ah, right, go. And there was another lad that had a dent in his tin hat. And he says, it's a bullet dent, that man. You know. So we got away with it like that. But it was another thing. That took about a month of really pulling. You know, it started off, right, I want to see your kit laid out. Of course, it was laid out Tipperary, you know. I said, well, that's no bloody good. That wants to be square, that wants to be polished here. And every other day, there was a kit inspection and the RSM, and it would come around and until, you know, the boot layers had to be curled up like a thing on a bit of cardboard and polished. And
everything had to be in its place, and
so it was back to
all the old fashioned bull where we started, aye.
Bull and all that.
Aye, that was it, aye. And but as I say, it was all done, so we didn't have to disturb it or anything like that.
That was something you did daily.
Yeah, we had to do it, so it wasn't too bad. But the guards and that, they used to get you down. It was, you were knackered. You know, one guard after another, you didn't get much rest. Then in between that, they would throw you out on night exercises. Take you out, and I'm not much good at map reading. I wasn't much good then. I'm not much better now. And you would be wandering around, and we had some young officers that come out. And they got lost. They lost us one night. And then I got to say, put some flares up, and we had to head back for the flares. We're wandering around bloody waddies and all sorts, trying to find out where we should be. And we got back, and then they gave us a week's rest. They said, right, you're going down. We went down past Suez, down towards the Red Sea, and there was a rest camp. Right, it was just some tents on a beach. And we got down there, and we were supposedly resting. And then they said, right, you're going to have to do your physical test, you know, for your PE, you know. And it's a mile in so many minutes, and 5 mile in 55 minutes, I think it is. Some with full kit on, some with PT kit on, you know. And they said, wait, where? So we had a brain gun carrier. So the part of the brain gun carrier stuck it, braided it, picked it in, right, set him away. And he went away along and measured a mile or 5 mile and stuck a picket in when he got the other end, you know. And said, right, you have to do that in a certain time along this hard-packed road. So we're all going along, jogging away and running away, you know. And nobody passed. Nobody got through. And the PTIs are doing their nuts and everything. And I said, right, it's a bloody long way of that. And they did it, and the speedo was out. It was a... We were doing about bloody 5 1/4 mile, you know. And, all right, well, so they shortened it, so everybody did it. And then we had another one where there was something else. We were going over, only this time it was over the actually sand, you know. It was one forward and two back. And we were running over there. And I remember running along, gasping for breath, and he's the CEO, it was crack as me, comes galloping away past. There you are, lads, and I'm too. And he just got out of his jeep behind us. We had to see him come galloping by. And nobody passed that. And we says, but these tests have got to be done on a parade ground or on a grass track, you know, an athletics track. And of course, so we have some thick, some bloody things. I say, no, no matter where you are in the world, you've got to be able to do a mile in so many minutes. So somebody said, what about the jungle? They don't even do a mile in a day when they're hacking their way through. It doesn't matter. You have to do this, you know, and we had to do it. Or else, once again, you lost some of your money. And
So when were you actually doing that?
I was debunked. June 54. It will be somewhere around about the 19th, the 20th, or something like that.
How did you get back?
I was panicking a bit. A week before I was due for the mob, I was still in Egypt. I was, obviously I couldn't come back by boat because they didn't have time. I mean, I suppose it could have kept us, I mean. But they didn't have time to bring us because it was at least 7 days from Port Said to Southampton and then what have you. And so they were flying us back. Well, the whole draft, like the lads who we'd all joined up together, all national servicemen,
so the same
lads, who were all coming back, like. And the week before, as I say, we were due to go, we were still in Egypt. We told we were
We were just waiting to go, but time was getting on and we weren't getting where to go. And on the Thursday night, I said, right, you're going down to a transit camp on the Friday. And it was the Friday before Whit weekend. So we left the camp. Oh, before you leave, you have to go on the CEO's parade. And he asks you to sign on. And you politely tell him that you're not. And he wants to know why and all this, that, and they just say, no, no. And then, so we went down to this transit camp, and then they just put you, it's just tents with some beds in, and you just grab a bed, and you're just waiting, you're just hanging around, and nobody's got any money. I think I came back with a halfpenny, about all I had. And we're just hanging around, and then about 11 o'clock at night, they just came and said, right, the pilot was stationed in Malta, and he'd flown from Malta to Fanara, and then he was supposed to have so many hours rest and then back to Malta, but I think he had a date on, because they said the pilot wants a quick turnaround. So they said, right, you're going. So we went from the transit camp down to the airfield, and of course you had to go through, get weighed for your bags, for your gear, and of course we're all overweight. It wasn't with the food that we had, it was the fact that our colour sergeants hadn't taken any gear off us. You're supposed to hand so much gear in and this, that and the other, and of course the more gear they had to look after, was more work for them. So they thought, well, I'm not going to take it. I've let them hand it in the UK. It's not my pigeon then. Of course, when we were on the scales, we have two kit bags, and we're on the scales, and we've got a few presents, and we're over the limit. And so they said, right, away, you'll have to take some stuff out of your kit bags and carry them onto the plane where you like hand luggage. So they said, the best things to take out is your great coat, which is the heaviest, and a pair of boots. So we had to take them out and roll everything up again. Okay. And then we got on the plane, and it was a Skyways of London, I think. That was a private plane on charter to the RAF. It was RAF pilots and an RAF sergeant hostess. All it did was give you a bag to be sick in and a boil suite to suck. You know, it wasn't much. Anyway, we took off 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning, and flew out over the Sphinx and the Pyramids, then along the North African coast, and then cut across to Malta, and we landed at Malta. And we had to get off the plane while they refueled it. And the air crew changed. And then we took off again from Malta and flew up over, I don't know, Sicily, Corsica, you know, coming up that way towards France, towards, is it Marseille, the bottom of France on the Mediterranean coast? Over Marseille, over. There's some bloody mountains there, over the top of there, over Paris, and into Stansted, which was just Nissen Hut then. And we landed at Stansted. Come through the customs, and they just took all our kit bags out. Everything. The officers, they got clobbered for, they were bringing cigarettes and tobacco and that, and we had no money to buy anything, you know. I bought a watch in Hong Kong, and I was wearing it, and he was going to charge us on it, and I said, well, I've been wearing it for 18 months or so, and he says, aye, right, well, is that all you got? So I've got no, got no doubts. Aye, okay. But tip all the gear out. Then they took us, there was buses waiting, and they took us into a
and whereabouts in London it was. But there's an old underground station that wasn't used for the underground. It was used as a transit camp. And we went there. Went down all these steps down to the bottom. We thought we're going to have to stay the night. And then they said, no, come back up again. And they said, there was two of us, two lads, there was me and another lad. They said, there's a travel warrant for, I don't know, 20, and there's a travel warrant for 30.